This is Jan Fisher. I'm interviewing Zita Rimley in her home on July 28th at 4:20 p.m. Okay. I want to begin today talking about your political activities, and I wanted you to explain how you first started working in politics.
Well, you know, when I first came to California, when it was before I was 21, but we were living in Carlsbad when I was 21, and you know, I've never told this to anybody before, but they were pressuring everybody to register, and somebody came to the house even then, not that many years ago. And my husband was a Republican, and he registered Republican. And he said, well, now, you're utterly ridiculous to register Democrat because this whole state's Republican, and you never have any say in everything, in anything, if you don't register Republican and vote Republican in the primaries. And it was true that the state was solidly Republican. There wasn't a Democrat to an elected office at all. And I registered Republican, and that worried me. I couldn't sleep at all. So I went down to San Diego. I said, well, what if every Democrat that comes out here registers Republican? How they ever build up the Democratic Party? So I went, they didn't have any registration in Carlsbad. There must have been just some special drive for something, mm-hmm. because I had to go down to San Diego to change it, to register again. And I had to go down to the San Diego to a county county building to change my registration. So my very first, I've got that big scar against me, my very first registration was Republican, but it didn't last long. I didn't vote. I never passed a voting period. But then at that time, that was in the 28 election for Roosevelt, and I drove in, you see, we lived in Carlsbad, and I mm-hmm. drove into Oceanside, where they had headquarters, and volunteered my time for it. Was Al Smith?
Al Smith ticket. Was 28.
Roosevelt was his. I think Roosevelt was the vice president.
Let's see. Was he or was he governor?
28. Then 32. Was Roosevelt was maybe maybe
you Roosevelt was governor of he was governor of New York, was that 28?
Yeah. But I'm not sure, because I know he made the nominating speech for Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
But I'm not too sure whether he was a vice presidential candidate or not. But anyway, he wasn't the nominee. It was mm-hmm. Al Smith was the nominee, and we worked in awfully hard in the headquarters, but. There wasn't a lot of enthusiasm down there because it was predominantly a Republican town.
So this was in Carlsbad you worked for?
Well, it was in the Oceanside headquarters.
Oceanside was where Smith had a headquarters
yes.
there?
Yes. They didn't have any in Carlsbad.
And how did you get in contact with the headquarters?
I just went in.
You just decided
just
you wanted
in.
To work?
Yeah, I just went in to work. And I went in every day and just worked. But people would come in for buttons and everything, and they seemed to be afraid to wear them. They'd put them under their lapel. They'd meet somebody and find out they're Smith. They'd turn back and say, I'm for him, too. So, but there was a big, people were afraid somehow to say that they were for Al Smith.
Do you have any idea, like, why people would have felt that?
Well, I don't know whether it was because he was a Catholic or he was supposed to be the wet candidate. Mm-hmm. He was for repeal of the, I don't believe it was repeal then.
Prohibition.
It was during Prohibition, mm-hmm. and I think people were all for that, but they were afraid to tell anybody else, mm-hmm. which seemed funny. But he was on radio then too. We did no television then. Mm-hmm. But oh my, I thought he was great.
Did you go down to work when you found out that Smith would be the candidate?
No, I just went down because it was Democratic headquarters.
It was a Democrat.
Yeah,
and
Democratic
you were working
headquarters.
For the party.
I was working for the party.
And what sort of work did they have you doing then?
Well, they had quite a bit of literature to get out. They had mailing lists that they sent out. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was too much precinct organization. Mm-hmm. There, as I recall, there weren't too many people going from door to door with mm-hmm. literature. But we kept the headquarters open, and we had an awful lot of requests for literature mm-hmm. that we mailed out. And we had a pretty nice little headquarters there, and headquarters
so
staff.
That you worked there every day, like doing things like answering phones.
Yes.
And did
then I think he never came to Carl's to Oceanside, but he went to San Diego, and we were getting loads of trying to sign people up to get down there to hear him down there. Mm-hmm. So.
Did you go down to here?
Yeah. But, of course, I was just one of the crowd down at San Diego. But we had a pretty good headquarters going in Oceanside.
Do you know how he did
Oh, he didn't win at all. Okay. No, he didn't win at all.
Did you, you mentioned about prohibition. What kind of effect did that have on California, at least as you saw it?
Well, it seemed to me that everybody... wanted it to end, but were afraid to say much about it. Mm-hmm. That they'd lose their reputation with their neighbors or something because they didn't talk about it too much, mm-hmm. which I thought was funny, because I thought the prohibition brought on so much more crime than it stopped. But yet again, I don't know. I think liquor's brought on an awful lot of problems through the years.
Did you know of people who were drinking in spite of the?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I think almost everybody. But they could get bootleg stuff. That was all the time they could get that. And even back when I was... When did Prohibition go in?
I think it was shortly after the war.
In the early 20s.
Early 20s, yeah.
Because I know that I have a friend in Fontana that his father was... bootlegger in North Platte, and I don't believe we had bootlegger. I wonder what we had when I was still at home. But I think that most people, well, I don't know that most people did, but mm-hmm. people that partied and a lot, they could get it. Mm-hmm. The people that were wealthy enough to pay for junk.
At this time, was this before you knew the man who lived in San Clemente?
Yes. See, we hadn't moved to San Clemente yet. Okay. But they always had bootleg liquor down there, but they weren't heavy drinkers. It was, I think they just had it because it was smart to have it.
Okay, so now Lou is a Republican during Smith's campaign?
Yes, he was. Of course, his father was on the Republican State Central Committee of Missouri for 18 years, and all the Remleys were always Republican. His father was Republican postmaster in Columbia, Missouri. It seemed awfully funny for him not to be a Republican, mm-hmm. but then after 32, he changed his registration to Democrat, and I always tell him that I did it. He said, no, I didn't. He said it was Hoover that did it, that Hoover maybe changed to Republican, to Democrat.
From Republican.
Yeah.
Did you, was he... bothered at all by the fact that you were down working so hard for the Democrats?
No, I never bothered him. He didn't know whether his bosses would like it, and I said, I don't care whether they like it or not.
His bosses were Republicans?
Oh, I think so, because mm-hmm. they were developers in the South Coast Land Company. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they were.
So during Smith's campaign, this was the first campaign you'd worked on.
Yes.
And had you, as far as other political activity before, that was that mainly just helping your mother out?
No, that was just myself. I didn't work in any organized campaign.
Mm-hmm. So this was the
first time. Organized campaign, that the party that I went to see the headquarters and worked.
Mm-hmm. But it didn't discourage you that
Smith Oh, no. In fact, I was so shocked when we won that later on I couldn't believe that everybody I voted for won.
So
it took a long struggle in this state, though.
Did you stay active in the party after his campaign? I mean, did you keep in contact with people, or did you?
I really didn't until we moved. I worked hard up in the Roosevelt campaign. I didn't work so good in the beginning because we didn't have any money. We were out of work. But when we moved to Tahunga, I worked for John Stephen McGrory. I worked for Franklin D. Roosevelt. In fact, I borrowed some money to go in the headquarters in Los Angeles and donated $5. Because I just thought he had to win. But I went to, we moved to Tahunga, and John Stephen McGrory, who was a writer, he had a column for the in the Los Angeles Times. And I always, and he also was the author of the Mission Play. That was the big thing in San Gabriel. They built a great big playhouse for the Mission Play. But he had a beautiful home in Tahunga, and he was running for Congress.
This is in which year is this?
Well, I think it was 34.
34.
And I worked awfully hard for him. And I always thought it was sort of a redundancy when he had, in his column was titled From the Green Verdugo Hills. And I wonder what they used the word green, verdugo, and I looked it up, and it's not an English word, it's a Spanish word meaning green. So I thought that was so odd to put the green hills. But that was the title of his, he had a column every day in the Times. Mm-hmm. From the green Verdugo Hills.
How do you spell his name?
McGrory, McGrory or something. Mm-hmm. But he was such a well-known figure on account of his daily column in the Times that he was elected. And that was something great, to elect a congressman.
So that was
about 34. That was the next time I actively identified with the campaign.
Okay, so I was just wondering. Okay, that
G R O A R I T Y. Oh, I managed his office there in Tahunga.
So that was 1934.
Yes.
So in the years between 28 and 34,
I worked, but I didn't do anything officially.
Do you remember Upton Sinclair's campaign?
Do I?
Were you active in that?
Oh, I worked awfully hard at it. In fact, I lost my lose job in Upton Sinclair. I guess I wrote that all out here. What year was Upton Sinclair?
I think it's 34.
That must have been 34. I was, well, you see, he was in the same office. It was McGrory. They just had the one office there. Mm-hmm. But I went in every district there. They up in the Bouquet Canyon and Mint Canyon and Soledad Canyon.
Just when you're living in Tahunga.
I lived in Tahunga. Mm-hmm. And I think McGrory was 36. I mean Upton Sinclair. Was he 34?
I made some notes here about him. So yeah, 34 he ran against Frank Merriman.
For governor in 34.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were both in Tahunga then and in Big Tahunga Canyon because Lou would call back to the state. And we moved from Tahunga to Tahunga Canyon. And I worked awfully hard for, I shouldn't do that.
Oh, that's fine. I just didn't want you to turn it off.
I worked awfully hard for Upton Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an awfully interesting place to live up there because Agua Dulce School was full of children that were mostly county wards. And that time, I don't think they got a so-called orphan's home yet in the county, but they put all their county children up there instead of, because with the different people, because the school bus picked them up in the morning and took them to school, then picked them up there and took them home. There were never any free time for them. They were they didn't have to walk to school like they would somewhere in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know one time I was home real late working. I gave out more stuff for Upton Sinclair, and Lou brought his boss home, and he wanted to know where I wasn't. I didn't get home till about 7 o'clock, and I had somebody there taking care of the kids, but he wondered where I was. I said, well, I was out working for Upton Sinclair, and that was when he was running against Frank Merriman.
Mm-hmm.
And Oh, this guy says, you mean to tell me you're out working for Sinclair? And shortly after that, Lou was laid off. And Lou said, now, if you hadn't opened your mouth, why, of course, they were the job was done and there wasn't another one, but I always bring it on that. But do you know, at that time, billboards all over the state had such terrific a sentence than Upton Sinclair. And it was just a sentence that you just, was terrible, you know, you wouldn't approve of it all. Well, I went to all the libraries around there because I got good library service there because they'd come in trucks, but they couldn't get an Upton Sinclair book. They didn't have any. And then when my sister lived in L.A. and I had her library card and I went to all the libraries in L.A. and there wasn't every book of Upton Sinclair was ordered out of every library in L.A. County and the L.A. City.
So they'd take his books out of
So nobody could get to check on these statements. And so then after that, in 36, I went home and I read every book he wrote. it was some character saying these things. You know, it wasn't his thoughts at all. It was the most vicious campaign.
A fictional book
that a character but they would say that quote, Upton Sinclair. Mm-hmm. Of course, he did say some things that from the book Prophets of Religion, mm-hmm. and I think everything he said was true too in the book. But the way they left out half the sentence and quoted put parts of sentences together, and mm-hmm. it made it so much. Of course, there were some things you can say that's true in Prophets of Religion that aren't too complimentary to different religions, but every big company said they were going to move out of the state if he was elected, and it was an awfully vicious campaign. And of course, what was so bad about it too, were that there were five Democrats running in the primary, and after Sinclair won in the primary, that none of them came out. In fact, even Roosevelt was very cool. He wasn't for him, or he didn't work against him or anything, but he didn't put the power of the presidency back of that campaign at all. Mm-hmm. And in 36, he was running again. Mm-hmm. He was on the ticket too, and he wasn't a bit happy. The powers that be in the state, the message he got was that it wouldn't help him at all to be for Upton Sinclair. But the fact this early campaign for Upton Sinclair is really what made the Democrats organize. Before that, they were just they weren't organized out here at all. They really brought to life a viable campaign. People that were really for the Democrats.
Now, Sinclair was running during the Depression. Was it in that election? There's still a lot of people out of work, and he had a
program. Of course, there were a lot of crackpot programs too. There's 30 every Thursday. Every Thursday you were to get $30, mm-hmm. and that I don't know that that was his or Townsend's. Townsend was the old age pension plan.
Yeah, I think Townsend had the...
I think maybe his was 40 or something.
Okay, now, Townsend was the...
old age pension.
The physician who had the old age...
The old age
revolving
pension. But he really, he was 100 a month, I believe. But 30 every Thursday, I think, was Upton Sinclair's. But they really and truly had, that was an awfully vicious campaign, and I worked awfully hard. I started in the primary in first majority, but he took no part, especially in the new gubernatorial campaigns, mm-hmm. but they all of them had literature, but then we moved to Tujunga, Big Tujunga Canyon, and I worked all out for Upton Sinclair. And that time, I think Culbert Olson got to be a state senator in that campaign. he didn't, then he ran later for governor and he won. And also I think Sheridan Downey won. So we had some changes at that time in the Democratic picture of this state.
So with the Sinclair campaign and everything, were you behind him mainly, were you behind his issues, the way he was approaching
his
issues?
I really thought so, because when you're out of work and everything, you look at things a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought we had to have a change, and he was a change. And of course, you never knew whether he was good or not, but he certainly was dedicated.
So for his campaign, what sort of work did you do?
Well, I just went to the headquarters and got material. I just worked.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a title. But I worked every house in Benedict Canyon and worked every house in Soledad Canyon from Saugus to Lancaster. Mm-hmm. And I worked every place in the whole, I went clear even into Acton. Mm-hmm. And all those hills, there's not a lot of people living through there. And the Agua Caliente School District, I got the names of every person from the teacher there, and I went to every home. I really scoured that district, and he won in there, too.
Well, great.
Yeah, he's
so
got
you
the,
were able to at least
work
in that
district. Got a big he got a big vote in there, because there weren't too many people up there with very much money.
Now, from what I understand, a lot of the problem people reacted to the fact that Sinclair's proposals were a lot of them from his socialist.
Well, I think
background.
He had been a registered socialist,
mm-hmm.
and. They put out all the literature they put out. In fact, I don't think the church was for him either, because of the kind of this book, Prophets of Religion, that he'd had one chapter on the prophets of. I don't think he mentioned the church, but they took it to heart. But I was certainly for him, and he did an awful lot for the Democrats because he got them together.
Mm-hmm.
There was really working groups after that.
So he had. Do you think he helped them organize?
Yes, he was. He woke the Democrats up, mm-hmm. and they elected others besides him. See, they elected. I think they elected Senator Downey, Sheridan Downey, senator, and they elected Culbert Olson, state senator, mm-hmm. and they elected Stephen McGrory. Of course, they re-elected Roosevelt. So that was really the turning point in our state to get some Democrats elected, and old Frank Merriam. He was a he was an awful dope.
In what ways was Frank Merriam a dope?
Well, I don't think he knew a thing. He just a pleasant, very pleasant fellow. But I know his niece that lived here and goes to Ebell. But at that time, Edmund G. Brown was a Republican. He wasn't a Democrat then. Excuse me, honey.
Okay. Okay. A little bit more about this Sinclair. So Sheridan Downey won a seat, and a lot of the other Democratic candidates won.
I got him that I worked, I was head of Sheridan Downey's campaign in Alhambra in 1952, but he was already a senator.
Mm-hmm.
When did he first get elected?
Let's see, I guess from what I have here, 34, he got his nomination for the lieutenant governor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Was he under with Olson?
That might have.
Yeah. But he's the one who appointed me postmaster.
Mm-hmm.
In Alhambra.
It was Hiram Johnson, who was still the United States Senator.
Yes.
From California.
Uh-huh.
Okay. In the Sinclair campaign, had you ever? I'd heard that in the movie houses, I read that in the movies they would show newsreels of Bolsheviks coming to California. Did you ever hear?
No, I never. I didn't hear of that. But it probably was true because they just the paper, the Times and the Examiner, the things they had against Upton Sinclair would just. Well, they just did make people's hair stand up. They were afraid to death of him.
Yeah, I guess these were some phony newsreel thoughts of
But having to think that they had enough power to take every book because I went. That's one of the nice things I got about the county. When we were up there, I was little, my kids were littler then, I had to stay home more, and I did read a lot, and you could, they'd come around with their trucks, and you'd write down the books you wanted, and they'd bring them back the next time.
So like a bookmobile?
Yes, they were just great. Then, but they didn't have them in Los Angeles either. They were taken out of every city library and the county library. Mm-hmm. Now that was somebody that had a lot of power and pull, so they couldn't check on him and read his books.
Did, okay, after Sinclair lost, okay, you're saying your work had mainly been precinct-type work?
Yes.
And organization work. What kind of organizational changes did you see him making in the Democratic Party, like, in what way?
Well, it was just that he brought people, more people out that were willing to work for the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember when I come down here, old Mrs. Lorraine Doyle Wilson, who was Clyde Doyle's sister, oh, she was an old timer. She remembered me from an old Upton Sinclair rally, and she said, and she remarked, my goodness, she said, if it hadn't been for that, we Democrats never would have gotten together, because they just didn't. It wasn't the thing. The Democrats just didn't do it. They didn't identify themselves as Democrats, and I don't know why. And just like Lou, it intimidated me the first time to register. Everything was Republican, period.
Mm-hmm.
But keep on working.
So you thought that Lou probably had the fact that you mentioned that they were laying people off, but the fact that you mentioned
that I was, he was so shocked, and Lou was so mad at me for saying that.
Okay, and so now is this the same year that McGroarty was running, or did he run?
He ran in 1934, and he was elected, but he didn't run again.
Mm.
I think he was only a one, but he put in the bill, that famous old age pension bill. He it was really the McGroarty bill. Then after that, Sheridan Downey took it up.
Mm-hmm.
But the McGroarty bill was one of the first big things for pensions that. I don't know why he didn't run again. I think it's because the Times, he was a Democrat, and the Times put on too much pressure.
How influential was the Times?
It was very influential. In fact, I think that it's one of the biggest mysteries. The Times is more independent now. They're not nearly as vitriolic as, it used to be. They were just terrible. Now, in the early days, the Examiner endorsed Roosevelt in 32 and 36. I think after that they had a falling out with him. But the Times was just very, very vicious. And Susie Clifton is one of our big shot Democratic workers out here. Then her husband was a judge. And then they both went to Micronesia after he retired in the Peace Corps. And when she came back, she said that was the biggest change. I think she was gone. And for two terms, I think she's gone 4 years from this country. And she said to think in her lifetime the Times would ever take an independent stance. She couldn't believe it, that was the big change in California. That they're still a Republican paper, but they're give the Democrats an even break, I think. Don't you?
Yeah.
I really think they do.
So this was your, McGroarty was your first winner.
Yes.
Okay, and did the Times, I'd say if he's working for the Times.
Well, I don't know why. I think that was the reason he didn't run again.
Mm-hmm.
He had a beautiful home up there in Tahunga, and it was, but I thought it was so funny. He had an open house, everybody. He had guards standing around because he had so many, he'd world travel, he had so many mementos. And I guess he wasn't used to letting the public in, but he had guards all around watching his things while all the poor shot Democrats were trekking through to a big garden party he was giving. But they were nice people.
Did you, you mentioned, I was just thinking that this was within the first 20 or so years that women have the vote. Did you notice a lot? Were there many other women active?
Oh, yes. Yes, there were lots of women. In fact, the women kept the headquarters open.
So it was during the day while their husbands were...
The women, of course, they didn't have anything to do with what went on the literature or the composing of literature or anything like that, but they worked in politics. They were working.
What did you do in terms of, like, with your children during the day? Were they fairly young at this time? Or?
Yes, I took them with me.
So they'd go with you?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, your officers...
Of course, when in Oceanside, I didn't have any.
Mm-hmm. So you're... When is Edgar born?
What dear?
What year was...
Edgar born is in 29.
In 29. So... Your children?
Yeah, they were older then, and I had cars. They went with me to distribute litter. Oh, they went with me in Mint Canyon all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've got the cutest picture. I'll show you from Mint Canyon for my kids.
Get passing out Democratic orders. So, as office manager for McGroarty, what sort of duties did that?
Well, of course, the main thing is when it's so hard when you have volunteer work. To have people there, more people call up headquarters and nobody's there. But we kept an office open all the time,
mm-hmm.
and it's just usually scheduling him for speeches,
mm-hmm.
that and not to get his schedule mixed up. That
mm-hmm.
and of course he was a well-known personality, so he was asked to go an awful lot of places out of his district, and. I tried to tell him that he had to stay in his district because that's where his votes were to get elected. And, of course, he liked the publicity, and when somebody would ask him in L.A. and the like, he'd rather go there than in his own district. But he did. He stayed in his own district, or at least he got the every place he was asked to go. But he was awfully nice to have him win.
So you were scheduling his
appointments
and making sure that people were
that every phone was answered and everything I found anybody called wanted anything that they got it, so they couldn't make that remark that they called and didn't get and try to answer the questions. And there was a remember Shippey that used to write for the Times, Lee Shippey. He was the candidate later on for Congress, too. He wrote a long column. He wrote for the Times for years. Well, what's happened to him?
How did you get to the position of office manager?
Well, you know, you just volunteer. I didn't get any money.
How did you, find out he was running and then get
I just called him up, told him I'd like to work for him.
Mm-hmm.
So he was tickled to death.
And then did he immediately, he said that you'd like to be his office manager?
Well, no, he didn't have an office yet when I called out, but he got a little vacant store, and we didn't have much in it. We had big signs up and had a desk and some chairs and telephone.
This is his main office?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Have you met him at all before that?
No, I hadn't met him at all.
So you just called up?
Just called up.
Were there, when you managed this office, were many other women doing these kinds of things?
Well, they'd call up, and I scheduled other people by the day.
Mm-hmm.
They'd come, and they'd give one day a week, one afternoon a week, or one morning a week, that way I wouldn't have to be there all the time. And that made it a lot nicer.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't hard to get volunteers. Renee Simon's campaign here is all scheduled up. I've turned in more names there, and they've really got a good campaign going. Of course, it's the hardest thing for an office manager to do is to keep people that come to volunteer busy when they come in, because if somebody comes in to volunteer and there's anything for them to do, well, they're not happy either.
Mm-hmm.
And they go home dissatisfied. Usually there's literature to get out, things to address, and all kinds of different things to do.
So,
I don't recall that he had, I think the only mailing he had was an overall party mailing. I don't think he had a special mailing. I don't think he had the money for it. Nobody had too much money to give in the campaign. I didn't have much anything to do with his finances. I didn't raise money.
From what you're saying before, he may have had.
I think he had plenty of money. Because he had ads and papers, and I didn't have anything to do with that.
Mm-hmm. So you weren't in on the fundraising?
No.
In this thing. Okay. After he won, did that give you any more contacts or anything in the party?
No, he moved away.
We moved on to.
Then when we moved to Alhambra, then I just went right down to the headquarters and started in working.
So, what year? So after McGrory, who was your next?
Well, Upton Sinclair, and then Olson. Didn't he win in 1934 for governor?
Yeah, he won in 1938.
1938. Oh, well, then I worked for Olson in Alhambra. But we moved to Alhambra in 1936, mm-hmm. And of course they had Jerry Voorhees already. That was the year. That's the year he was running, and the headquarters was already open at that time in 1936. So I just went right down there, and oh boy, did I work!
In 1936 for Jerry Voorhees.
For Jerry Voorhees and for the whole ticket, mm-hmm. for Upton Sinclair. I mean, for Colbert Olson, he was an awfully good-looking guy. Mm-hmm. I remember we had a big luncheon for him in Los Angeles at the Alexandria Hotel, and I tore in at noon, and I had to, right after the luncheon, not after he spoke, they had some other, but I had to leave, and I after he spoke, and I went out, was going down the elevator, and evidently he had to do, and so we were in the elevator alone, and I hadn't met him only to talk to him very much, so I looked, he was so handsome, and I looked at him, and I says, Governor, you're the only governor I ever met that looks like a governor. And he says, oh, thank you. He says, how many governors have you met? I'll never forgive him for saying that. But he was still laughing. I made the awfulest... slip or something at the luncheon, because we were all to get up for announcements, and I was having a big picnic in Alhambra, at Alhambra City Park, for Jerry Voorhees, and I got up and made a big splurge, and I told them that we'd come in here and we expect you to come out to our affairs now, and that we were giving this big picnic in Alhambra City Park, and so I sat down, I thought I made this, and somebody and got up and says, what time? And so I just got, and I said it, and I didn't realize I was saying anything. I would think, I says, well, the beans are at 6 and the music begins at 7. And everybody roared, and you know, I didn't know it till I was on the streetcar on the way back, what everybody was laughing at. And I got so mad. because I was making beans, and I made beans for 200 people, and we had the Alhambra band that came and played the band. They were and I was so serious. I said the beans, and the band did play, start in at 7, and but anyway, I felt terrible, and I think that was the reason he was laughing at me. He was still laughing. I didn't realize I'd said that. I didn't think of it until I got back on the streetcar or the interurban going home. Those good, gorgeous red cars that you could get places in and not smog.
So what, Jerry Voorhees was running for Congress,
yes,
at the time, and he won in Alhambra.
He won.
What work were you doing for Jerry Voorhees besides cooking beans?
Oh, well, we had this big picnic. Well, after that, I was always his manager for that assembly district. Of course, he had 3 assembly districts in the old 12th Congressional, 58, 48, 58, 53rd, and 50th assembly. They're all changed now. I know it's 5. See, she just hit
stop.
But just keep still, Kathy. But, of course, and I worked awfully hard for the assemblyman there, too, that ran Richard Richards ran 1 year, and Hugo Norum ran 1 year, and we just worked so hard to change the picture in Alhambra, but we didn't do it.
And this Hugo Norum, who was the jeweler
yeah.
who told you to buy the bank stock.
Yes.
The same one.
Oh, you remember him? Well, he was a city councilman, mm-hmm. and I managed his campaign for the assembly, and he was such a good man, such a kindly man. I don't know that he was, he was bright in that he just was good and kind and had a lot of common sense. He wasn't a politician in the sense that Richard was. I don't think, I think that he'd have made a good assemblyman, but boy, Richards would have made a great one. But he couldn't get elected in that district.
Was the assembly district, the three assembly districts, they were state assemblies that made up the one congressional.
But our assembly district included San Marino, South Pasadena. San Marino was 99% Republican. And they always got the award. There was some nationally known organization that gave an award to any city or community that had the most of their registered voters out to vote. Well, San Marino always won it. Every Republican there voted. So we had a lot to bucking us and South Pasadena. Then we had Monterey Park and Wilmar and Garvey that voted, and San Gabriel that voted Democratic. And the other offset, so it really went the way Alhambra went.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't win until after I left.
So you worked in the assembly districts for both the assembly candidate
yes,
and
Jerry Voorhees. But we kept Jerry Voorhees in until 46. He was in for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we surely did work hard for him.
So every, you were the assembly
Manager for Jerry.
Did that automatically, where did that put you in terms of working for the assembly?
Well, I always did, because we worked out of the same headquarters. We just had one headquarters.
Mm-hmm. No, it was just for the Democratic
candidates. But I always did all Jerry's work. I got out his mailing and organized his precinct work. And, of course, he was so conscientious, and of course he couldn't call on every home, so we went through every precinct and got the homes that had three registered Democrats in, and we found about two per precinct, two homes, and so Jerry personally called on those homes that had three registered Democrats in. So then he saw six Democrats anyway, in each precinct. But it was a terrific district. It went clear from L.A. city limits clear to Claremont. And then it included Whittier and clear to Monrovia and Arcadia. So it was an awfully big district. Yeah, awfully big district. Then after a while, Chet Hollifield, it was managing that area of his campaign, the Whittier district, and then when they redistricted, Chet ran for Congress. And of course he had the Democrats. Whittier wasn't so Democratic, but the rest of it all was. Montebello and all of that area. So Chet, I knew Chet very, very well. He had a haberdashery, a men's clothing store in that old theater building on Whittier Boulevard. You could wait a while, Kathy.
Well, we're about out of tape on the side, so...
Oh.